nos vamos a curar. Órale, la curada. Heal, yes, Simón que sí, a Pachuco Portfolio.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland. Coming up next at 11 a.m. is Stage and Studio. But first, this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the MLK Dream Run Kickoff Celebration on Saturday, September 7th at 1 p.m. at the PCC Cascade Campus in Portland.
The MLK Dream Run Kickoff Celebration features music, theater, food, drink, dancing, and raffle prizes. There's also a vendor fair for the kickoff celebration to the MLK Run on Sunday, September 8th.
Again, that's the MLK Dream Run Kickoff Celebration on Saturday, September 7th from 1 to 8 p.m. at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus, located at 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're tuned into KBOO Community Radio. Coming up next, a Stage and Studio, where DMA Roberts features the seventh season of Corb Theatre's focus on plays by contemporary Irish playwrights. That's coming up next right here on your community radio station. And all this programming is brought to you by KBOO members. Not a member? Well, then become one today by going to kboo.fm and clicking on that donate button. Now, Stage and Studio.
I'm DMA Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music by Molly Bauckham at harpmolly.com. Today I feature the founder and artistic director of Carib Theatre. With me in my studio is Gemma Whelan, and it's so great to have you here. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Your first production, it's called Eclipsed, opens your season on September 20th. And so we're talking a little bit early about Carib Theatre's new season. But, you know, sometimes it's good to get the word out and give folks a chance to make plans, especially as we change and shift from summer to fall. So I appreciate you joining me today to give us a preview of what's coming up at Carib Theatre. How long has it been around?
7 years. We're actually in our seventh year.
I can't believe the time has gone that fast. That's what happens, you know. You think, oh, well, that's not that long ago. But no, it was like 2 years ago. Okay, so 7 years ago. Is that when you moved to Portland too?
I moved to Portland about 10 years ago in 2008. So actually a little over 10 years.
What brought you here?
I left the Bay Area. I had lived in the Bay Area for many years. You know, I came originally from Ireland. And the Bay Area was getting very overcrowded, very expensive. Couldn't afford to buy a house. That was one of the big reasons. And then my husband is originally from Portland. So family.
Ah, I didn't realize that. So that's an interesting pathway there. So you came from the Bay Area 10 years ago, and it took about 3 years for you to decide that you wanted to start a theater company. It's making a big impact in Portland. Can you tell us about the journey from that time you moved here to really wanting to found an Irish theater here?
Yeah. Initially, I actually, you know, coming from the Bay Area where there are a lot of Irish and Irish Americans, it was a bit of a surprise to learn that there were not very many Irish here, relatively speaking. There just isn't a big Irish population. And I just felt, especially because there were so many changes happening in Ireland, in the culture itself, and Ireland has so many amazing plays. And I think the best plays, of course, are universal, so appeal to everybody. And it seemed to me like I started actually with a reading and just to test to see if there actually was a need, if there was an interest. And we started with, in 2012, with a reading of A Night in November with Damon Cupper. It's a one-man show set in Northern Ireland. And I didn't know if it was going to be too esoteric, if it was too much, you know, in politics, Northern Ireland. a lot about the politics of the North and the South. It's also very, very, very funny. And the response was amazing. And I was so encouraged by that that I just sort of took it one step at a time and continued to do readings, productions, and we built from there. And here we are, still going strong.
At what point did you move into a three-play season?
That actually happened about 4 years ago. And then we had a little break where we did, because actually we were trying to do Eclipsed 3 years ago and couldn't get all the funding. So we ended up doing, I did a sort of a festival around Eclipsed, which is the first show of this season. I did a reading, three evenings at Kell's Irish Pub. And I also did a screening of a film, Sex in a Cold Climate, which is about the survivors of the Magdalen Laundries, and had a panel discussion. So it was several evenings of an event. But we have been doing three plays for about 4 years now.
Maybe that's why I consider it a relatively new, because you're like a full-fledged theater company in the last 4 years, right? And so, you know, did you feel like Portland had sort of this dearth of Irish plays that were not being produced, you know? I mean, did it seem like, you know, there are Irish plays produced, but a lot of them are like classics. And I think perhaps you're bringing more modern playwrights?
Certainly more unsung playwrights, unknown playwrights. So a lot of other theatres here do Irish theatre, Artist Rep, Third Rail especially, and they do wonderful plays. And but, you know, Conor McPherson, Martin McDonagh, the people, they're brilliant playwrights, they're really well known. And I felt that, first of all, female playwrights were not being represented, voices that we hadn't heard about. So I started to look around some of the plays I knew already, and then I started to find more and more plays. So that's really become our mission at Corrib, is contemporary plays. That was the other thing, is, you know, they also were doing the classics. And I would include people I love there, Brian Friel, Samuel Beckett, and the older playwrights like O'Casey, and they're amazing. But I felt there was a niche, there was a space to seek out lesser-known playwrights and give voice to those who haven't been heard here.
So, Corrib, why did you settle on that as the name for your company?
The reason I picked Corrib, it's a river and a lake in the west of Ireland, and the city of Galway is on Corrib. And I always loved Galway. It's a smaller city, and it's always been an arts hub. And there's an amazing theatre company was founded there by Gary Hines, female artistic director, over 30 years ago. That was highly unusual. It's still going strong. They're a world-class theatre now called The Druid. And I was really an homage to the Druid Theatre, to Galway, to the smaller, because people know about Dublin, and Dublin is an amazing theatre centre. The Abbey Theatre, the Gate Theatre, and a lot of other smaller experimental theatres are there also. So, and then I found out that Corrib may be the name of a sea god in Gaelic lore, so I picked Corrib.
All good reasons, you know, there's so many different ones, meanings to it. So I have to admit, when I heard about Corrib, I wondered why here, why now, especially when the bulk of mainstream theater in Portland is predominantly for white audiences, right? And so you gave me some reasons that it just wasn't being done, right? And I know you've been working toward highlighting the modern Irish works, especially in an effort, you know, especially ones that foster more multiculturalism. For instance, Hurl last season, about an international hurling players. Are there many works like that in the Irish canon?
There aren't a huge amount, but they are there. You have to look for them. And, you know, Ireland changed drastically, starting really the late, probably mid to late 90s. There was an influx of immigrants, asylum seekers, refugees to Ireland from Africa, Poland, a lot from Eastern Europe, but from actually all over the world. So the demographics have changed to the point where today, roughly about 20% of the population of Ireland was not born in Ireland. And then some people have lived there for generations, they've intermarried. So the country looks completely different than it did when I grew up, even than it did 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So I really want to represent that change. And, you know, and then it took a while because it takes a while to get established. And then to, you know, it's a privilege really to produce theatre, to get to a point where that can be somebody's profession and that they're recognized also. So I found this play, Hurl, the one you mentioned, and I loved for the very reason that it deals with, first of all, hurling is this, many people may not know, and some people think it's curling, but it's actually an ancient Irish sport. It's been around for a really, really long time. And in the Irish imagination, it's really tied up with what I would call a narrow definition of nationalism, the old Irish idea where everybody looks the same. They're mostly white. They're all Catholic. And they and also the Gaelic sports was actually very much tied up with Ireland becoming an independent republic and getting its independence from Britain. So there was a whole movement called the Celtic Revival or the Celtic Renaissance. And so in the play, a group of refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers, and some native Irish as well, they get together and they form a hurling team. And to the discomfort, I would say, to put it mildly, of some of the very entrenched locals who think, who are these people and how dare they represent Ireland and what are they doing playing our sport? And many of them actually, their skin was not white, but they'd actually lived in Ireland for generations, some of them. So it's a wonderful play. It was a big cast. And we actually cast the entire play with women and people of colour. And it was very exciting to see that on the Corrib stage and all of these Irish accents, you know. And I think that was a breakthrough. And a lot of people who came to that play said, oh, this is amazing. This is really an Irish play. And said, yes, it is. It is an Irish play. So there are other plays out there, but I've also made a commitment to, even if the people in the plays are not necessarily, so, you know, we had people in Hurl who are of African origin, Argentinian, Bosnian, and so on. So, of course, they will be cast with people of colour, right? But in the upcoming play, Eclipsed, it's set in the 1960s in Ireland. Honestly, probably most people were white. But I ignored that when I was casting. I opened up the field, invited people to come and audition, and cast the best people for the roles. So the protagonist in the play, who actually represents the playwright, is played by an African-American woman, for example. So I think it. Some people are surprised. They say, oh, Irish theatre. Or even when I invite them to audition, they will say, well, do you know that I'm African-American or Asian-American? I'll say, yes, I do. And I'd like you to come and audition. Thank you.
I like how people are so polite at auditions. I'm D-Mate Roberts, stage and studio, talking with Gemma Whelan, founder and artistic director of Corrib Theatre. And it's the first production we just started talking about is Eclipsed, and it starts their new season, which opens September 20th. And the show runs through October 13th. And we're going to talk about the entire season pretty soon. But Eclipse is going to be at New Expressive Works on 8th and Southeast Belmont in Portland. You can find out more about their season and follow along at CorribTheater.org. And I just want to just say that it's great that you're having this success and you're actually working very consciously to hire actors of color and directors and designers of color as well for an Irish theater company. And I loved what you said about 20% of Ireland is now immigrants. And we hopefully will see more works by people who get into theater, you know, and start writing plays, right? So I like that education part that you're offering too, that preconceptions about what Irish theater is, you know, what are these preconceptions? And you're kind of saying, well, not necessarily.
Exactly. So I'm hoping to shatter that preconception and, you know, break it wide open. And, you know, in Eclipsed, just like I'm trying to just break through some of the people have lots of images of Irish society too. And they're even, you know, part of what we're doing with this season, because I'm calling it Remembrance, Resistance, Restitution, is remembering the past, and it's not a pretty past. And I think the act doing theatre is an act of resistance. And when you put your voice out there and you make it public and you say this is a story that has to be told, that is resistance. And by the same token, there's also a lot of good going on in Irish society. So I'm looking at the past. I'm looking at some of these stories where our church and state, particularly, and society colluded to keep people down. And Ireland, many people may know, was the first country to actually vote for marriage equality by popular vote just a few years ago, and also to repeal the Eighth Amendment, which was a very strict ban on abortion. So that has been revealed, so that now women who are women and children were, you know, the in the past, traditionally the ones who were actually pushed down by the system. Not surprising, it's happened all over the world.
Well, I want to talk about why Eclipsed really reflects that. Eclipsed is a play by Patricia Burke Brogan, and it's set in a Magdalene laundry, and then the characters are nuns, and they force young unwed mothers to work under really terrible conditions. And it's written by an ex-nun, and that was there and witnessed all the horrific history to this place, but also not just that history, but for the women, but also what happened to their babies too. It's just scandalous what happened to them. Let's talk a little bit about that, because in the view of reproductive freedom for women,
and just in terms of the date, it's actually set in the 1960s and the 1990s.
Oh, but the Magdalene laundries have been around since
the
1800s.
Right. So the first Magdalene laundries were founded in the 1800s to help so-called fallen women. And if they were worried about then, if women got pregnant, they were worried about them taking up prostitution. So, you know, they had they intended to help and to give refuge. And then all of that started to change in Ireland. In 1922, Ireland became an independent republic after hundreds of years of fighting colonialism, fighting the British. That's really what the big struggle was for centuries. And so in 1922, Ireland became a free state, 26 counties in the south of Ireland. And right at that moment, there are actually documents to prove that the church and state made a pact. They colluded to hide certain aspects of society which didn't align with their vision of a pure Catholic Ireland, which was the image they tried to project. And they decided that women should be the gatekeepers of this purity. And so therefore, anybody who deviated from that path was actually taken away. And so this included girls who got pregnant, who were not married. And it didn't matter if it was rape, incest, and many of the cases were rape, not all. And sometimes, even if they were considered to be too pretty or an occasion of sin, or they might lead a man on, they couldn't take a chance. So they were brought into these laundries. Those that had babies gave birth. The babies, as you alluded to, were taken away from them. And they were actually trafficked to this country. It's the only word for it. They were sold. And for a while, they were kept in orphanages until adoption laws came into place in Ireland. But the women were separated from their babies. And to this day, many of the records have not been opened up. And then this is a story that it was like an open secret. So obviously people knew where to go. Like if your daughter got pregnant or your sister and, you know, you were about to get, for a man, he was about to get married, you know, you couldn't have that shame. You couldn't have that scandal. So off they went. They signed them in. A man had to sign in the woman. And some of them were in there for several years. Many actually never got out. They were kept there for the rest of their lives, supposedly atoning for this one so-called sin. And again, regardless of whether they were raped or not. And there was also no education in Ireland. There was deliberately no contraception was allowed under the new constitution, no education about sex. You were not allowed to talk about it. So, of course, a lot of young girls or women had no idea. Really, no, and men too. There was no education. So this was, as I said, a well-kept secret. So people vaguely knew about it. And then Patricia Burke Brogan, as you mentioned, was a nun. She was a novice and she was training to be a teacher. But for the summer, she was sent to one of these laundries and she was shocked by what she saw. She spoke up. She was told blind obedience, sister. Do what you're told. You're about to take vows. And we're doing these women a favor. They're sinners. Nobody wants them. And she left the convent. She actually left. But it took her 30 years to find the courage to write this play because that was under death threat. People sent her death threats and said, you can't talk about that. Because that was very much Ireland at the time. You don't talk about that. You push it under the surface. We're a pure country. We're a Catholic country. And in the 90s, everything started to break open and was partly, you know, sex abuse scandals all over. Same thing happened in this country. A lot of it in the Irish communities, Christian brothers, nuns, happened in orphanages. And a lot of this abuse started to be exposed. But Eclipsed was actually the first work of art to have the courage to proclaim this is going on. And it was first produced in 1994 while there were still Magdalen laundries in operation. The last one closed in 1996. So this is recent history. This is not ancient history. And, you know, there's still things like this going on to this day, too. It's not like everything overnight is suddenly better.
So refresh my memory on this, Gemma, wasn't there also in that scandal of what finally closed the Magdalen Laundry was that there were babies that were buried? And there were actually no records for their deaths.
There were frequently no records of the women either, the Magdalen women. They were actually buried in unmarked graves. And that was a whole scandal when Ireland started to experience this massive growth. And a lot of convents had to sell off their land. But the one you're alluding to, there were mother-baby homes worked in conjunction with the Magdalen laundries. And in the, I think it was 2014 or 15, it began, but it was exposed in 2017. Bodies were found in a mother-baby home in Tuam in County Galway of 796 babies who were buried in a sewer. Their bodies were just thrown unceremoniously into a sewer. And this started this other, whole other, you know, excavation and inquiry into this. And in fall, actually, probably about the time that we're putting on the play, this September, October, those bodies will be exhumed. They have now found their names and they have been named. But, you know, they're not the only ones. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds who will never be named.
I mean, as you're saying this, I'm thinking of The Handmaid's Tale, the TV series. And this is just as horrific as what was what's presented as fiction or a possible future. And this play really does hold a mirror to religion, to government complicity, and the lack of women's choice and the ability to have freedom for their own bodies.
Absolutely. And women are speaking up. And, you know, there are lots of other things that have happened to women as well, and they're speaking up and speaking up about it. There are commissions of inquiry. There is a book that was written fairly recently about, it was called The Magdalen Laundries and the Nation's Architecture of Containment. And it actually just really, it's sort of a creepy, it gives me the creeps because it's like, I know now what was going on. I grew up during this containment. It sounds like a very nice word, but it contains, you know, multitudes of basically pushing down, shaming, ostracizing, punishing, and stealing their lives. Their lives were stolen from them.
Well, I think this is an important play, and you feature an all-female cast, and you also feature actresses of color in this. And I think that, it's certainly something. I think, you know, your particular way of directing this is probably not necessarily the way other people would direct it. And I really say kudos to you, you know, for your inclusion.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, one of the reasons, I mean, I would want to be open in terms of diversity of casting anyway. But one of the important questions to ask for me around this play is, who are the people that we are now keeping down, containing, incarcerating? And, you know, we can congratulate ourselves in Ireland and say, isn't this great? This story is out. We're talking about it. And we would never do that again. However, we are actually doing similar things to refugees and asylum seekers in terms of the direct provision scheme, the ways that they live. And they're living in some of these former convents are actually places that house immigrants. And I recently read there are surveillance cameras there.
So much work to be done and so much to talk about. So I hope you're going to have talkbacks. I assume you are. Mm-hmm. Corrib Theater presents Eclipse by Patricia Burke Brogan, directed by Gemma Whelan. And the shows run September 20th through October 13th, Thursday through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. And all shows are at New Expressive Works. That's located at 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. And you can get more info at corribtheater.org. And I have all that info at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Before we run out of time, I'd like to talk about all of the season. We just talked about Eclipse, but you've got two more shows that you want to give a shout out to. Let's start with James X.
James X was written by Gerald Mannix Flynn, and it's actually about his own experiences. He was pegged from the age of three as being a problem child from the age of three. And this is his crime was being poor. He grew up in inner city Dublin. And he was one of 16 children. And this is a man who is still very much alive and in his 60s. So, you know, there were still people having 16 children and more. He was sent at a very early age from Dublin to a reform school, so-called reform school, in the west of Ireland, and where he was abused, as all of the other boys were. So it was run by the Christian Brothers. So there was a whole system. You know, they worked in conjunction with the Magdalen Laundries and the Mother Baby Homes, right, to contain people. And it included reform schools, so-called industrial schools, and asylums. So people that they considered unfit, again, for this model society that Ireland was supposedly creating. And, you know, this happened in the 60s and the 70s. So, again, we're not talking the Middle Ages. We're talking really very, very, very modern history. And in the play, he confronts the church and the state because his own personal records, in the last 20 years, people were allowed to have access to their records. And when he got his court records and the records of every single institution he was sent to, including prisons for petty theft and so on, he decided to make a play out of it. So it's a very powerful piece.
And that's James X by?
Gerard Mannix Flynn.
And that's directed by Gemma Whelan. And that's happening February 13th through March 1st of 2020. That sounds so weird to say 2020. And that's going to be Wednesday through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. And the final season, final play of the season is Kissing the Witch, which I love that title.
It's by Emma Donoghue, who people will probably recognize from Room, that was a well-known novel, and then it became a film. She's Irish playwright. She lives in Canada now. And she tends to write about the female and the queer experience. And she basically takes these very traditional fairy tales and turns them on their head. And she does it with a lot of humor. And there's a three-person cast, three women who play all sorts of different roles and one man. And so it's you know, she skewers the just the notion of the traditional, you know, girl meets boy story. There's a lot of girl meets girl. And one of the quotes that I love, she has, says, when a boy changes his life, it's called an adventure. When a girl does the same, it's only a fairy tale. So it's a subversion of that.
That's a great quote. That's happening. Kissing the Witch is happening April 3rd to the 26th at Corrib Theater. And I just wanted to, you know, I'm sure you have season tickets and all that for subscribers, so give a shout out for Corrib Theater and see their works. I'm going to mention Eclipse because that's starting your season. That's happening September 20th through October 13th, and it's at New Expressive Works at 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. And all that info is at corribtheater.org, and I have that info also at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. So it's great to talk with you, Gemma Whelan. You know, great work that's being done. And I really appreciate you coming to my studio today to give us a preview of what you're going to be giving this community in the next year.
Thank you so much, Dime. I really appreciate the opportunity, and see you all at the theater.
Well, that's it for Stage and Studio. I'll have the podcast online at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. We're going out with more music by Molly Bauckham at harp
sharpmolly.com. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Kind friends and companions, come join me in rhyme. Come lift up your voices in chorus with mine. Come lift up your
voices. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. Coming up next at 11:30 is Art Focus, where Joseph Gallivan interviews Mary Weaver Chapman of the Portland Art Museum about Paris in 1900. That's coming up at 11:30, but first this from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. Walter Cole owned the first Portland coffee bar, then bought an old beer and wine tavern. He began a drag act that, in 1974, became Darcelle 15. This musical tells the life story of Walter, Darcelle, and more. Again, that's Triangle Productions, That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall, located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com. Well, coming now up next is Art Focus with Joseph Gallivan interviewing Mary Weaver Chapman of the Portland Art Museum about Paris in 1900.